You're in with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dolores Cahill Show on TNTRadio.live. And my guests today, all from Australia, the land down under, Craig Kelly, leader of the United Australian Party, Professor Ian Brighthope, and Ben Bornstein. And welcome, Ben. You wanted to just carry on the conversation from the last hour?
Sure. Look, I wanted to perhaps look a little bit at some of the data that's coming out. And all through this COVID-19 pandemic, some will call it a plandemic, we've been seeing what the doctors have been warning about, the experts that are being censored and kept away from the public. And all along, we were saying, look, the data's going to catch up on you. And it is catching up on them. And it's becoming more and more obvious, even to people that haven't seen the data, as they look around and they see sports stars falling over and dying suddenly. As we see on the news, on the Channel 7, which I can't stand listening to, but occasionally it's on, I saw a story where they're talking about, well, wouldn't it be a great idea if every household in Australia had a defibrillator? Oh, it seems to be quite coincidental with some of the most commonly seen adverse effects from the mRNA vaccines reported. And when we have to keep using the word reported, this is because the TGA in Australia, headed by John Skerritt, they like to say that their reports, they're not causal. You can't say that just because someone hopped on the bus and then they collapsed that it was because of the bus. But you've got like, you know, a few hundred thousand people have hopped on this bus and are reporting a problem when you compare it to 29 years of data before that of all the other buses that they've hopped on and barely a mention that someone's, you know, having a heart attack or is having neurological problems, the side of their face is falling or, you know, they've got changes in menstrual cycles or, you know, it's just a Pandora's box has been opened by the use of these novel technology. I say novel technology because they haven't been used before. Vaccines that are playing with fire. I'm an engineer, and when we design equipment, machines, we look for what could go wrong before we try putting it in place. And we're talking about really simple stuff compared to the body, compared to the cell, compared to the, you know, for God's sake, the DNA and the RNA. We wouldn't dream of going into that level of complexity and saying, oh, let's see what happens. We don't have any safety data in the medium or the long term, and let's roll it out in every household and every person and every body and every cell. It's absurd. And I believe personally that the health regulator head of the TGA, headed by John Skerritt, has released on the Australian population a risk that should never have ever been taken on the scale that it's been taken on. And now we're seeing in the data some incredibly worrying concerns, and it, all signs points to pull this off the market, certainly make it available to those who want it, but certainly don't make it as the primary approach to solving what is a risk stratified, highly risk stratified condition that we're learning.
Hey, can I just jump in there on the data you're talking about?
Yes, please.
The most important data that I think we have is excess mortality. Now, we're running here currently in Australia from the start of January to we've got 4 months of data. Our Australian Bureau of Statistics is very much behind on this data. We're showing about a 17% increase, or a 17% increase in the number of deaths that we would have expected given the data from recent years. That equates to about 8,500 extra Australians, that there's no explanation about why we have these extra deaths. But then when you look at it, the correlation between those deaths and the vaccine rollout, I did something of the last, there were 9 data points where you would see when the vaccine rollout would increase, the excess mortality rates would go up. When the number of vaccine rollouts decreased, it would go down. It would go up and down depending upon the number of vaccines that were going. I think there were 9 data points, and every time they turned in the same direction that the vaccine rollout was being up ramped up or ramped down for various reasons, for holidays and for booster injection sort of thing. Now, no one is talking about this. There is no coverage whatsoever in our media. You would think it should be on the front. It should be the headline screaming on every single page. What is going wrong? You know, all these bureaucrats say, oh, we're keeping you safe, we're keeping you safe. When the reality is in Australia, for the data for the first 4 months we have of this year, and this is how far the data bonds, so we have no idea what's happened in those months since.
And maybe, Craig, we should say that Health Freedom Ireland led an investigation into the deaths in the care homes in Ireland in January and February. And I was associated with the analysis, which was done really in April and May, and showed an absolute correlation to 32 standard deviations, absolutely correlated between the date of the injection and the date of the deaths. And many, you know, a quarter of the elderly died within 48 hours. And in one care home with 51 residents, 19 died within 2 weeks, 26 out of 51 died within 5 weeks. But that data was analysed statistically by a number of groups, and it was sent to every member of parliament in the Dublin Parliament and key officials, and well publicised in April 2021. And still the injections went on and are ongoing, including to pregnant women.
I've also seen some data on the pregnancies. The number of miscarriages, it seems to be, and again, it seems to be if you've had these injections in your system before you were pregnant or in the first trimester, the data I've seen on that shows the number of miscarriages is absolutely frightening. And yet this has all been covered up. There's no discussion of it in the mainstream media. And yet they're going and just telling pregnant women to go and inject themselves when they have no idea whatsoever about what the long-term adverse outcomes are. They have no long-term data, and yet they are telling pregnant women to go and inject this substance into them. It is just showed that how we've completely lost our way in the medical sphere, and how these government bureaucrats and influenced by Big Pharma, and the politicians are just to blame, and the cover-up in the media, all four of them are equally to blame. I just think, as Ben said before, the data that is coming through is going to, there is a tsunami of data that these people think if they can hide forever and just keep digging themselves a bigger hole. The tsunami of data that continues to come through, and the thing is, because it's months behind, is going to swamp these people.
Craig, I think Ian would like to just come in there to add something.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Thanks, Dolores. You've heard of Luke McClendon, I presume. He's a specialist obstetrician and gynecologist. And his subspecialty is in fertility. And he published a paper on the incidence of miscarriage in injected women. Unbelievable. Over 50% and miscarried in a particular population.
Yeah, look, they're just playing with fire. There's such a disrespect for the unknown and the complexity of this medication, and failure to weigh it up with the risk benefit. One of the early things that Dr. Zelenko brought in early on was that he was risk stratifying his patients. That's something that people don't get in our media. They were showing 30-year-olds suffering on a bed. It was made up, and how it's going to affect their families and their children, et cetera, when that was so far off the bell curve of what you would expect with this disease. And there's a significant risk stratification. In terms of children, it's reported there's not a single healthy child that's passed away from COVID-19, not a single one. And yet you're going to throw this unknown Pandora's box of chance towards their future, their ovaries, their testes, the development of their children. I mean, you've got to sort of wonder, do these people want their lineage to continue? And what would they risk? You know, what's worth that risk anyway?
Well, as a doctor, if you give somebody a medication and they get sick and then die, you have to suspect that medication. Even if they get sick, if they don't die within the first 24, 48 hours, but if they're unwell and they've got an inflamed arm and they suffer from fatigue and headaches, and then within a couple of months they're dead, you've got to attribute that to potential medical miscarriage of medical practice, negligence. And if you don't stop prescribing that drug and continue killing people, what is that? What do we call that? I mean, my son's partner got pericarditis from the vaccine. She was a fit, healthy, elite athlete. Pericarditis was going to go, according to the cardiologist, within 10 to 14 days. Well, she was still sick months later. So the cardiologist said, well, don't worry, dear. You wait for an extra couple of weeks before you have your second shot. What sort of medical practice is this?
And
this
is it a cover-up, Ian, or is it just they can't? Cognitive dissonance. They can't take on the responsibility that they've made an error in judgment, and they need to correct, and so they dig themselves a deeper hole, which is what seems to be happening with the health authorities and the politicians. Is the doctor at the clinical level?
Yeah, all of that. They dug a hole and they're digging it even deeper. That's the problem. They're willfully blind, of course, and it's also personal gain. These people don't want to say anything negative about the vaccine because they will get reported and suspended or lose their job. That's as simple as it is. And we cannot speak about it. I mean, I'm lucky because I'm retired. I'm training doctors and giving doctors advice about how to manage their patients and doing little training courses. But I would leave the profession, as many have and many are doing now in Australia. Not just doctors, but nurses are leaving the profession. And we're running little groups about what are they going to do. They become wellness consultants or something like that, which really doesn't fit their training, but they're desperate to stay out of the system, which is corrupting them. And the hospitals have got ramping ambulances simply because there's no staff in the hospital, or there's a lack of staffing in the hospitals.
Ian, I've got to say that the silver lining in all of this is I think that those that are waking up, and unfortunately they're waking up through seeing personal tragedies in their own families and friends, etc., are recognising that the medical system, there is something wrong, the health authorities is something wrong. It's being driven by agendas other than a genuine concern for the health of the individual. And so right now, I think people are starting to turn and look for a medicine that's a real medicine, an integrated medicine. And I think, you know, some of the institutions that you head, that's the way that I think medicine is going to go in the end. And there's going to be a far better health system and level of health available to people going forward from here once we get past this mess.
Yeah, a real health system. And I'd like to just mention to Craig a couple of the freedom parties and one of the parties from New Zealand, political parties, asked me to put together what I thought would be a good health policy. And there's nearly three pages of health policy, just basically the building blocks of a policy whereby doctors can be doctors again and not dominated by authorities and also corrupted medical associations and training, and that there's never to be a public listed company that manufactures medicines and vaccines that make the decisions about public health policies ever again. So that's something I'd be happy to share with you, Craig. I know that you've got a lot of great ideas. I do hope.
I think if you look at how are you going to avoid such similar disaster, and this disaster is still going on. You know, there's still people being lined up. There's still no mention of vitamin D. People still don't have access to ivermectin. So this disaster is going to roll on and on and on. But so it's not so. But how are we going to avoid similar disasters in the future? And it gets back to the fundamental thing: you've got to have freedom of speech. You've got to allow debate. There are so many times I saw when I was being attacked in the media, I said, okay, let's have a debate. I'll bring my experts, and you as whoever you are in the government, you bring all the experts that you want, and I'll bring my experts, and let's have a debate. And all the time they refuse to do so. Like shutting down speeches in Parliament, censoring people like professionals and medical experts with decades and decades of experience talking firsthand, being shut down off platforms, as social media platforms. This is
this is why we've got ourselves into such a mess as a society, because there's been not the opportunity to have the value, the importance of the value of freedom of speech and listening to alternate opinions. And it's going to go on and on.
You can't even get an opinion, an expert opinion, to be seen by a Supreme Court judge. In the New South Wales Supreme Court, one of the judges just passed my evidence by and listened to the government side in a case with regard to vaccine mandates. That's not justice. That's
with
not
respect
justice.
To getting the message out, it's a good time to plug TNT Radio. That's one of the great platforms that's getting out there. And, you know, all the work that people put behind it, like Dolores and all the people in the
because
background.
I guess what Fantastic. We were trying to do there. Yeah, because I have a custodian media, and we had, you know, we are networking all of them, like UK Column, and there are many things like Dave Cullen, the Computing Forever show, and Brand New Tube and BitChute. So really what we need to do is to coordinate together to get people listening to move off of Facebook and the censoring platforms and move on to the new free speech platforms.
Right, and there are ways to actually use Facebook to get people off them. You know, you can put, you know, of course, I'll try and censor it, but you can even post QR codes to Facebook. Their algorithms aren't going to be able to check the QR codes, and that could point people away. But I think you'll never fully get rid of Facebook. But so long as people know the signposts to the information the freeway that's out there, that's really important. And so, you know, we can talk amongst ourselves a lot, but people that are listening now, even if you reach out to five other people that've never heard of the TNT Radio.live show, you know, tell them, look, aren't you, to me, honestly, and it's a pun and it's true, listening to current mainstream media makes me sick.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess what we're doing, I'm in the World Freedom Alliance conference in Budapest. And, you know, all of us have either have warrants out for her arrest or been unlawfully detained by the police, or like Heiko Schoening, Dr. Heiko Schoening was arrested at Speaker's Corner in London, you know, Manika Helleberg, mm-hmm. Nigel Lutton. I've been unlawfully detained, but actually two people, Mads Pavic was unlawfully detained on the way to Budapest Airport yesterday, and an amazing doctor, Dr. Natalia Prego, was detained by the police for a few hours on the way to our World Freedom Alliance conference in Budapest. So it's not just that they're not investigating the deaths in the clinical trials, they're trying to criminalize doctors and scientists who are speaking out so that people get the information to not get the injection, to not get the adverse events and die.
Just on that, Josh, one thing I think that's very important in the years to come that needs to be done from a government perspective, and the weak governments we have almost elected around the world are not going to do this. You can't have these big platforms, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter and the likes. You can't have them enjoying the legal benefits of being a platform and the legal protections of being a platform, and yet they act like a publisher. They built these business models up based on being a platform, and now they want to say, oh, no, we're really publishers and we can censor information. That's got to stop. There should be multi-million dollar fines against these organizations for suppressing free speech.
Yeah, I think that you could take that further too, Craig. The people that are doing hit pieces on early treatments and things, I think they should become liable for anyone that might have listened to them, not followed up on early treatment, and then had the loved ones or them die because of it. You know, these people that are throwing out flippant comments that, you know, satisfy the narrative that they're all paid to promote, being, well, let's get out lots of vaccines. If they are killing people or inadvertently leading to people's deaths, maybe that could be traced back and there can be a few. Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a few reporters you can think of.
Yeah, well, there was one hit job that was done on myself in the Australian newspaper, which is generally a conservative newspaper that sort of has a probably more right of centre balance. They ran an article, and the headline was "Ivermectin is for parasites," with a large picture of myself on the page. They go through 100 photos and find the most unflattering picture of yourself, emphasising that I'm the parasite and ivermectin is for parasites only, with a whole lot of lies told about it, and emphasising how wonderful, you know, these magic potion vaccines are. It was just a disgrace. It was just a disgrace coming from a newspaper that has for years been of such quality and standards to publish that absolute rubbish and garbage. And that has cost people's lives. These people have blood on their hands, and they've got to be called out, and they've got to be held accountable in the months and years to come.
Yeah, I was writing to John Skerritt of the TGA. Occasionally he answered me because he's not answering anymore, perhaps because the data is so overwhelming. But in terms of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine's use in multi-drug early treatment protocols, not on their own, in multi-drug early treatment protocols, they've been banned by the TGA, and John Skerritt really has to bear some responsibility for that ban. There are papers, and Peter McCulloch put me in touch with some papers that show that the early treatments clinically are achieving results of 85% better than what we're getting here in Australia, or from what they call standard of care. There's a website that is www.c19early.com. That's c19early.com. And if you scroll down to the clinical trials and a clinical the early treatments versus late treatment physicians team's results, we're not talking about the results you see in a single drug random clinical trial indication of it being useful. We're seeing what's happening in actual practice, and the results are far greater than this 85% reduction. So I write to John Skerritt and I say, look, looking at the New South Wales data, these blocks are stopping protocols being used effectively around the world in a clinical environment, and we can prove it with huge databases and Excel sheets of patients. This is the death count up to week 8 of a New South Wales reports that are government reports. We're talking about just in New South Wales alone, up to the 26th of July, that there were 1,680 COVID assigned deaths. And if we'd taken 85% of those away, that would be 1,269 people alive today that were denied early treatment protocols because of the bans and the classifications of medications like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin as poisons. These are medications that have been used for decades. Hydroxychloroquine, in the dosages that are recommended in the early treatment protocols of the great doctors around the world, the dosages are dosages that are taken every day for the rest of their life with people with rheumatoid arthritis. These are they have almost non-existent adverse effects in the same reporting system that the TGA.
Never forget about the TGA and our friend Skerritt, that he interfered in the sanctity of the doctor-patient relationship. So if my family doctor, who I trust and who has done his homework and who has done his study and had done his research and consulted with other doctors and has seen clinical results himself, if my doctor thinks that, well, you know, I think for your conditions and everything, I think ivermectin is worth a try, a drug that has 35 plus years of safety data, that should be a decision between myself and my doctor, and no government bureaucrat in Canberra or anywhere, any government bureaucrat should be able to override that for a basic treatment like hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. And that is exactly what these people have done. They've given the most frivolous of excuses for, and these people all
and
have.
And Craig, I think as well, one important point, what some of us highlighted at the very beginning was that all these deaths are preventable deaths if they were given the right medication. Mm. But I'd be interested in what Ian thinks, that all of these so-called COVID-19 deaths were preventable.
I just wanted to butt in there. There's a tag team going. It's the TGA and APRA, the Australian Health Practitioner Regulatory Authority. They've been involved in the in rattling the saber and deregistering doctors who are challenging that you should be using early treatments with these medications, and that you should be doing proper risk benefit analysis and risk stratification for the use of these novel technology vaccines with the highest danger indicators we've seen in any medication rolled out across the population. So it's a tag team there, APRA and the TGA. But and I believe, Ian, you were a victim of APRA going after you.
Oh, yes. I mean, that was a long time ago when APRA, the medical boards, went after me. It was back in the HIV AIDS days when I was fighting again the protocols of Fauci and keeping HIV/AIDS patients alive much longer using the nutraceutical approaches. But I want to follow up with the prevention. There didn't need to be any deaths. Why did we have to wait for such a long time for a substance that didn't work? And why did we need the lockdowns, which did more damage to the population's health, when we could have measured everybody's blood vitamin C and D levels, brought them up to optimum, and prevented the infections in the first place? There was so much scientific evidence to support that for decades before this pandemic. Martineau in 2017 published a paper in the British Medical Journal to show that vitamin D would protect against coronaviruses, coryza viruses, influenza viruses, and it was far superior to even the flu jab. We knew about it right from the beginning. We tried to get into the nursing homes and do vitamin D studies. The management refused us. The medical people refused us to get in there. I had experiences with patients in hospital, with families begging for help. One particular patient was dying in a hospital in intensive care, about to go onto a ventilator, and the family said, "We're going to take legal action if you don't measure our daughter's blood vitamin D level." So they measured the vitamin D level. They found that she was extremely deficient. She got a whacking big dose of vitamin D by injection, and she was out of intensive care within 24 hours. But another hospital...
And that, yeah, and Ian, isn't that, that has been the case for countless patients really all over the world. So I suppose that is the issue why a lot of us have been talking then about the liability and the law situation, because if someone need not have died or need not be suffering adverse events if they get access to medication, then there is a contribution to the death and adverse events. But just we'll just go to a quick break on the Dolores Cahill Show on TNT Radio Live, and we'll continue the discussion with our guests after this short break.
TNT Radio's George Eliason.
Ukraine is also continuing to use butterfly mines in Donetsk. And what's really nasty about these things is that they don't place them. They actually fly a rocket over. The rocket explodes overhead, a minor explosion. Really no consequence there, right? It might be a failed rocket. And it releases all these mines that flutter down. And some of them are brightly colored greens or pinks, so they attract children. And they're so light and fragile when you step on them that a 3 or 4 year old could set them off, which is why they're dangerous. There are brown and tan ones, and the leaves are starting to drop with the rainstorms here. So they're hiding in the natural debris. The other day in Donetsk, four people had part of their foot blown off stepping on these things.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
One kind thing, like giving us the clothes you don't wear anymore,
gets me a wheelchair and my independence back.
One kind thing, like raising money with a bake sale, gives us comfort, food, and a warm smile after floods destroyed our home. One kind thing, like challenging yourself to a sponsored cycle,
helps me sleep soundly, knowing my children have clean drinking water.
Choose your one kind thing and help change someone's world. Search British Red Cross today.
Hey Australia, there's never been a better time to check up on your health. We have a world-class healthcare system that's easy to access, even when you can't be there in person. Telehealth enables you to catch up with your GP or health professional, and the Australian government has now made it permanently available through Medicare. Show your health some love, face-to-face, by phone or video call. Care for your health. Find out more at australia.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Through the training.
Through the drills.
Through the driving rain.
Through borders, through bushes.
Through barbed wire.
Through doors, through windows, through walls.
Through water.
Through mud.
Through dirt. Through pubs, through clubs.
Through thick and thin. Through the noise. Through the shouting.
Through the silence.
Through it as a unit.
Through it as a team.
Through it all, together.
Your local infantry regiment is recruiting. To find out more, visit your local Army careers office or go to armyjobs.mod.uk. One Army, regular and territorial.
During the pandemic, 129 billion unrecyclable masks were used and thrown away every month. Over 3 billion masks now pollute the oceans. Let's not turn a blind eye to this disgusting plastic pollution. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Dolores Cahill Show on TNTRadio.live. And if you want to follow me, you can follow me on custodian.com. And I've just set up a Telegram channel at Dolores Cahill, and the podcast will be up on that. But just, I thought it would be very interesting. I was contacted in the last few days by someone who has taken the injection and is suffering adverse events. And I thought it would be very brave of him and very interesting for the listeners and also for the guests on the show. So you're very welcome to the show, and I'd be delighted if you wanted to tell your story and introduce yourself.
All right. I've never been on the radio before, but first things first. My name is Lee Cronin. I did not want to get the vaccine. I had an abscess tooth that was out to here. And they said I had to get the vaccine in order to get treatment for the tooth. I suffered 2 weeks with pain, and it got to the point where it started getting dangerous, you know, an abscess tooth traveling up. Long story short, I kept presenting to A&E with chest pains and things like this. They kept just fobbing me off, sending me around and around in circles. My own GP never followed up, never recorded anything. And it just, I had one unusual experience in a hospital. So they basically told me I had a high white blood cell count, one doctor. Within 2 minutes, there was another doctor telling me I was being discharged without care. First, I was told I was getting care, then being discharged without care. After that incident, I feel I got blackballed completely by the hospital and by whoever runs the hospital, okay? Since after that, I was not able to get an appointment to get my to see my GP. I rang and rang and rang and rang and rang and rang and rang. And in the end, I went into the office and sat inside there and said, I'm not leaving without an appointment. She sent me back up to the A&E, and the A&E said, you need to get a heart monitor fitted. I was also told this by South Doc, which my doctor ignored, which she is the CEO, not the CEO, but she's on the board of directors of South Doc. And I've just been blackballed. They will not... I was told 2 weeks ago, I went up to South Dock with chest pain, and they told me take paracetamol. And then he started getting a bit aggressive, saying, I'm done seeing you now.
So maybe Lee just, as well. I might just, if it's okay, Lee, I'll say the chronology of events, and you can put in the time frame. So you had a toothache, that then you had an abscess and you needed to get it treated and you were worried. And then you were told that in order to get the tooth abscess treated, you had to have the injection. And maybe, do you want to just explain how long ago did you get the injection? Do you know what it was? And how soon after that did your, symptoms happen?
It was the Pfizer injection. I got the two. I'm not too sure the date. I started feeling unwell pretty much straight after it. Like,
and how many months ago was that? Was that like in the last month or two that you got it, or
about? I think just before Christmas.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And it just kept getting progressively worse. I presented to A&E multiple times. I don't know how many times I presented to A&E, and they just kept fobbing me off. A&E. South Doc told me that I was to get a heart monitor fitted and to see a cardiologist. My doctor completely ignored this. But after the incident in the CUH, I was just completely blackballed wherever I went. That's what I feel, that they don't want to accept liability, because if they accept it once, then that's a precedent set, and they just won't do it. So anyone who is having adverse effects, they're just... I've seen awful things in the hospital lately. I saw an old man with blood coming out of his leg, and he was sent home, nothing wrong. He died 2 days later because I was talking to his daughter. Like, things are getting disgusting, and they're just not accepting anyone who has. And I was told take paracetamol for my chest pain. without a doctor even checking my heart.
Yeah. Do you want to just go into like what kind of symptoms you've had with, say, since Christmas? Yeah. And did you, were they new to you?
Yeah, they were completely new. So I've had like, I had like weird kind of unusual pain in my leg. Not like pain as in like pain, but just uncomfortableness. I've had numbness in my hands. Fingers have just went numb out of nowhere. Now that has went away because I've been pumping vitamin C into me and other things. I have been following advice, what I found online, but it's just, I cannot get medical treatment at all. The A&E will not listen to me. The doctor will not listen to me. And this is their little trick. They will not put you into inpatient because the A&E seems to be a separate body from what I can understand. And it's like, they can just go round and round. I also have, like another doctor who sees me for something else but he won't record anything. I've got my medical records and not once did he record it. It's just, and nothing, they're just doing nothing for me. I feel like I'm being just left here to die. Like, all I want is just someone to take me serious. But when I go into triage nurse is taking me serious. And then it gets to a certain point and it's like, right, you're done. There's nothing we can do for you. Go back to your GP.
Yeah, and maybe Lee, now obviously I can't give medical advice because I'm a medical doctor and, you know, obviously you should be under care, but why did they recommend that you should have your heart monitored? You had any treatment?
My blood pressure has been through the roof. My blood pressure has been recorded something over 180, like I can't, 90 over 180 about 10 times, tachycardia. I've also been told, I've had an EKG done numerous times and I've been told I have an inverted T wave in my heart.
And just one last couple of questions. How old are you, Lee? And we'll say before you got the injection, had you any of these symptoms?
I'm 33, and no, I never had any chest pain or anything like that before. Look, I cannot lie and say that I've lived a completely healthy life. I have been an addict and things, but not for a very long period of time. Look, I had a very traumatic thing, something happened in my life, and I was 28 before that happened. But like, it's just everything. So first they try to put it down to anxiety, and they just keep changing their tune, and they just keep sending me around and around in circles. Like, I'm fully convinced I had blood clots in my leg. Because it was just like the veins in my leg were just popping, blood pressure through the roof, and the blood pressure has never been treated. The chest pain and the tachycardia has never been treated. Nothing has been treated this year. I've been to A&E at least 15 times, at least.
And just to say, Lee, last year, would you have been in A&E at all in the last, we'll say, in the years, the last 3 or 4 years? So you were a healthy 32-year-old last year. All right, thank you so much. So I just wanted to just, you know, it's very, there are not very many people who have experienced the injections that are actually describing their adverse events. So, I mean, I know we can't give medical advice, but Ian, or if you want to have any comment, because I think a lot of what we hear is that the people who are experiencing the adverse events are not being reported. So the ones that are recorded are a complete underestimate, and also they're not being properly recognized in the hospital and treated.
They're being sent to A&E. That's why it's not an accident emergency thing.
Thanks, Dolores. Lee, I empathize with you tremendously. You're one of millions. You've been abused by the system, and that the system has let us all down. That you should never inject somebody with a vaccine if they have already a toxic problem. You had an abscess on your tooth. That's a major problem in your system as far as sepsis is concerned. And if it run away, you could have ended up with septicemia and dying. So from that respect, you're an extremely lucky man. You've been extremely unlucky to be treated the way you have been. And not only unlucky, it's an ethical problem in my profession worldwide now. Now, I can't give you medical advice, but I can suggest to you to go on to some of the websites like the FLCCC and have a look at what they're recommending in terms of self-help. And also, there is a book that I wrote, The AIDS Fighters, that was actually forwarded by the late Linus Pauling, who won the Nobel Prize for vitamin C. There is a general advice there on how to look after yourself. That was, of course, for HIV/AIDS, but we're very much in a situation now where the immune system has been suppressed by the vaccine. So we're calling it VAIDS now. So I would strongly suggest you can get onto the internet. Somebody photocopied the book and stuck it up as a PDF. The AIDS Fighters, with my name on it, it's a good general read for the public. It's got some protocols there that are being followed now by many of the doctors around the world, with modifications, of course. But if you were me, I would up my vitamin C as much as possible. I'd also take some extra magnesium, like 600 milligrams of elemental magnesium per day. That will help your blood pressure. It should help your cardiac functioning as well. I can mention a number of other things, but again,
Maybe we don't have to go into detail about that, but I think, Ian, as well, it is that here we have like a young, healthy man that hadn't been to hospital in the years before and is now going in and out to hospital and is not been recognized, recorded, or treated. So it's almost like the system is working against those that have been injected as well in a horrible
way. I have a hunch as to how they're doing it. So when I'm sent to A&E, it's like accident emergency, and it's down on paper as if I'm presenting as an accident emergency. They even tried to paint me as I was crazy. They had a diagram of where I sat in the waiting room every time. I sat there because there was a charging port for the phone, you know? and it's just like they're trying to discredit me. It's just... I have a picture on my phone. I took a picture of my front page of my medical records, and it said apparently Ranks was sent here by South Dock. I was not apparently sent by South Dock. And I said, can you ring South Dock? And they were like, we don't do that. Well, I said, don't be accusing me of apparently. See, I can speak for myself. And they don't like that. They like you to just yes, 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 yes. The amount of people I've seen turned away up there is sickening. It's absolutely sickening. And I can tell so many stories, but I don't have time. But it's just absolutely disgraceful.
Lee, can I ask you, when you went to get the vaccine, which was almost, it was a form of coercion, they wouldn't treat you if you didn't take it. you would have been aware perhaps of some of the risks that were there. Did the people giving you the vaccine advise you of any risks that you were taking? Did they mention... adverse effects that might happen, or the common adverse effects where you can look up vaccine adverse events are being reported, or that it might even have consequences on fertility or whatever. Were you given any warnings at all, or did they just take care of whatever it was?
Nothing.
30
it
pounds or whatever
is injected. Jabbed it. Absolutely no warning. No. And like, I was in so much pain. Like, I sat in pain for two and a half weeks. Like, I didn't want the vaccine at all, like, from day one. I just knew it was pushed through too quick, and I'm a thinking
they didn't
man,
tell you what your like, what your risks were. They didn't tell you what your risks were from COVID
the way they done it in the way where I went to was a city hall in Cork. So you basically queued up, and you didn't speak to any doctor. You went into the cubicle with the nurse. There was an army guy standing there. Your arm is pulled up and you were jabbed. That was it. All I could think of was the pain in my tooth and it traveling up to my brain. Like, I could have got a brain infection. I really do. Like, I could see the vein. Like, it was horrible. Like, the pain was unbearable.
It was utter coercion.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't want it, you know.
What I was, your symptoms that you're bringing up, I reckon there would be, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of people that have seen their friends or their family with some sort of symptom like this, where they're out of breath or they've got pains in their chest, tingling in their fingers, that sort of thing. And I was just wondering, even on a personal note, for the people I know that are suffering these things, and Ian, what are some tests that they can do that might ratify that something is going on? I mean, I've heard something, I mentioned it on a private chat just here on the window The D-dimer test seems to be something that comes up all the time. And are there things that show that your immune system is being compromised as well? What are the tests that people can ask for?
Yeah, look,
they're sending
there are tests that can be done, but they don't necessarily show anything. I've got so many reports now of patients who've been injured, like Lee, with MRI scans, blood tests, x-rays, special tests, nothing comes up.
I'm talking more about myocarditis and heart-related ones.
We can diagnose myocarditis, but the problem with the myocarditis, it's atypical. It's caused by an inflammatory process as a result of the production of spike protein, the overproduction of spike protein, and possibly the metabolites of the spike protein. So it's until we can turn off the MRA production of spike protein and other metabolic waste products, then we don't have tests unless they're very, very academic tests to routinely do this with the patients that are coming through.
Is there anything to say that the
mRNA, we think, may not be able to be switched off. And that was the issue, you know, why many of us came out, is that it's not, they have modified the RNA. Normally, our mRNA is degraded within minutes, but they've actually changed it so that it is not able to be degraded, which means it's very hard to see how it can actually go out of the body.
I think the only way of doing it is with biopsies of the pericardium and myocardium, the heart and the covering of, and that's fraught with danger. I wouldn't be recommending it at all. We have to treat the inflammation. We have to treat the toxicity problems, making sure that you do it naturally. And I can't go into therapy because it's not appropriate. But if you have a look at what's on the website, that's a self-guide, Lee, and you can follow it, and you can follow it at your own leisure. One of the things I would say about wellness and health in this respect is, number one, your diet's very important, and that's general. Moderate exercise, mild to moderate exercise. Don't push yourself and don't cause symptoms. And detoxification involves fasting. And some of the evidence now coming out on long COVID and vaccine reactions is, if you give your gut a rest and don't eat for 24 hours, and that means just drinking water and perhaps having a weak cup of tea or coffee, that's a real fast. And you do that, you give your whole system a rest. It gives it an opportunity to fight the virus and detoxify as well. And
what about kombucha? I make my own kombucha. Like, I'm a healthy man. That's the thing. Like, I do eat healthy, you know?
I think we won't go into too much on it, but I think what it is in a way, what we're seeing is there are now millions of people in Ireland and Australia and all over the world that are experiencing these adverse events that really are not getting acknowledgement even as a group in the medical profession or by the politicians, by the regulators. And in a way, Craig, it makes complete sense, because if they are to admit that these adverse events, that these people are there, then they would have to acknowledge, Craig, if you want to come back in, that the politicians maybe made a mistake in forcing this through in the last year or two.
The fact that it's been mandated is a clear breach of the human rights conventions, the UN Human Rights Conventions. All these medical treatments, you have a basic right that you have the right to refuse a medical intervention. I mean, this is not any medical intervention. This is a medical intervention that has zero long-term safety data, and yet we've had the political class throughout the world happy to sit by and watch the citizens' human rights being abused and this to be forced upon people. It has been one of the greatest disgraces, I think, in world history that will go down as. And unfortunately, Lee is just one of the people that is suffering from it. There's millions of others. And what we can also see from Lee's story is the reporting data of the number of adverse events is manifestly underreported. Now, this is why you've got these, I think you call it the yellow card system in the UK. Is that correct, Dolores?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, ours is called DAN. I think it's VAERS in the US, and it's Eurovigilance or something. All these reporting systems are passive systems. The underreporting is massive. And yet it is the numbers. These are used being as quantitative, to give quantitative analysis to undertake these risk benefit analysis. When they know, so what's the risk? Well, they look at the data from the adverse event reporting, knowing that it's maybe 10 times or more at least underreported. So yeah. So all these risk benefit analysis that are being done by these government bureaucracies, they're advising people to go and to inject this substance into their body, is basically done using data that they know is flawed, and they know that underreports the adverse events and overreports the benefits.
Craig, what about the vaccine companies themselves? I mean, they know that what they're putting out is missing safety data. They may not have reported thoroughly. Their indemnification, is it rock solid, or are there avenues where they, who have reaped the biggest benefits, might be able to repay the world?
Yeah, I think there is grounds here under Australian law for a massive claim to be made against Pfizer. Now, even though that they've signed some indemnity agreements, there's a provision that's called our misleading and deceptive conduct provisions. It basically says you can't engage in misleading or deceptive conduct in trade or commerce. Now, those studies and those reports that Pfizer used to get the approvals are clearly done using fraud and deception and misled people. Absolutely crystal clear about that. The way they left, I think the great example is that young American girl, a 12-year-old girl that put herself down for the clinical trial, was catastrophically injured by the vaccines, and they put it down as a gastro complaint. That is fraudulent use of the data. So the data they got approved with, and if you engage in misleading and deceptive, you can't legislate your way out of it. You can't say, oh, the misleading and deceptive conduct provisions don't apply to us.
Well, I hope you're right, Craig, that these people can be made to pay, because they're the ones with the deepest pockets right now, and they're getting their deep pockets from these medications. As we come towards the end of the show, I'd asked Dolores if we could put a plug in for some of the early treatment nutrients that you can get easily. And being a good friend of the late Dr. Zelenko, and Ian as well, being a good friend of him as well, there are multivitamins. You can just put them together yourself, or you can get them all together in a pack. And, you know, I'm going to plug the Z-Pack, which is something that Dr. Zelenko put together and is being sold right throughout the world through either direct or mail, etc. Here in Australia, we're working to try and get that made here as well, and I think it will be made here as well. But in the meantime, you can look at just the ingredients on the Z-Pack and find them yourself as well, and get them from. And that speaks to the heart of Ian saying.
I'll chip in there. At the end of last year and this year, I think that when the lockdowns were going on and people were being restricted from movement, I think I was travelling around the place as much as anyone. I went to public rallies in all the major states of Australia, in Melbourne and Ballarat and Newcastle and Sydney, multiple times. Speaking at these rallies, I was having hundreds upon hundreds of people coming up in selfies, very close groups. I've travelled all around the country during the election campaign, met hundreds of thousands thousands and thousands of people at huge rallies. And I, fortunately, touch wood, haven't got COVID. And I've been taking these protocols, and yet all the other politicians that have been triple and quadruple vaxxed and triply masked, they've all come down crook with COVID and all been sick with COVID. So I know it's just one little anecdote there, but myself using these protocols, which you said is the FLCC and Dr. Zelenko's protocols and those things, I've so far managed to be able to keep myself fit and healthy and avoid COVID, as were all these other politicians that have been, you know, abusing me and getting stuck into me and saying, I should be censored and silenced. they're all the ones that have come down and been sick.
And Craig, you know, you may well have had COVID, not known it, and with the symptoms being so slight, having been prepared with your system.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe I would just like to thank all of my guests today. So we have Professor Ian Brighthope and Craig Kelly and Ben Bornston and Lee Cronin. But if any of you have a website or anything or any initiative that or a book or whatever that you'd like to promote in the last minute, go ahead.
Yeah, just quickly, Craig Kelly on Telegram. As I said, I have a life ban from Facebook, so you can get me on Telegram. Craig Kelly. Your National Australia, United Australia Party.
Okay, great. And Ian and Ben?
We can see me on BitChute and Rumble. I've done a few things on those. There's a lot on Google if you want to have a...
Great stuff. And Ben and Lee, thank you very much, all of you, for coming. And you can find me on Telegram, Dolores Cahill, on custodian.com. Thank you, everyone, today for listening to
Dolores Cahill. You're all so brave.
On TNT Radio.